Certainly, we have a big issue in front of us today. We had a meeting earlier, but quite frankly, we couldn't go get everybody up here in the first meeting, so we missed our friends in the union movement, and we want to hear, obviously, from you folks today also. So there's a couple of bills on the agenda. It's my intention to probably talk about it, but not to pass them out today. I don't think we have enough information on the two bills, so we'll look at them and have some discussion, but not move them. And what I kind of, you know, we're here today, and we're not obviously all happy that the hub and what's going to happen is, in my judgment, inevitable. And I wish that wasn't the case, but I think that is the case. So I think we have to try to be positive if we can, and upbeat, and try to see the good that can come out of this, and not necessarily, you know, use the shotgun approach. And that's a personal opinion of mine. I, you know, if it's going to happen, what do? We protect the jobs we have. We make sure the hub is hopefully the same size. We hope that the amount of planes that come and go are either the same or enhanced. And but our friends in the union movement, obviously, we're very, very concerned about our folks that are well paid. And, of course, they've helped the situation along the way, taking their hits and what have you. But we don't want them to lose their opportunities to stay here and work here. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Let's do the best we can and get the best out of this situation that we can. And hopefully we'll hear today from some folks that it's not all gloom and doom, I hope. So, and are we concerned? We certainly are. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to reach out and meet you halfway from the other side of the aisle here, but I appreciate your opening comments and some of the conversations that we have had about this combination, this merger over the last couple weeks. And I appreciate how you are attempting to run this particular hearing. The Senate Business and Jobs Committee should not be a firing squad, right? We should not be a firing squad. I think that is your intent for today. We're going to listen and we're going to learn. But I was disappointed with the tone of the House meetings on this topic, and I hope we can set a better standard. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I appreciate that. And Senator Michelle and I have talked on numerous occasions on this, and, of course, he's the ranking Republican on the committee, so I appreciate that statement. So with that, we have at least presenters, and the first one will be from Northwest Airlines, Mr. Ben Hurst, who is the Vice President and General Counsel of the airlines. And I want to welcome you to the committee, and Mr. Hurst and I have had a couple of meetings also. So welcome to the committee, and you can sit down and proceed. Every witness, when you get up there, tell us your name and who you're with, so for the tape, for the record. So welcome to the state capitol, Mr. Hurst.
Thank you very much, Senator Metzen, distinguished members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Ben Hurst. I'm Senior Vice President for Corporate Affairs and the General Counsel of Northwest Airlines. And with me this morning is Kathleen Nelson, who's an executive in our Airport Affairs Department, who's here if there are any questions on any of the financing arrangements between Northwest and the MAC and the state that I can't answer. I'm sure she'll be able to. She's been living with them for several years.
A lot of pressure there.
I very much appreciate the opportunity to appear here today and to explain the reasons for the recently announced merger between Northwest Airlines and Delta Airlines, and in particular to emphasize that the primary beneficiaries of this merger will be our frontline employees and the communities that we serve. I'm particularly honored, Mr. Chairman, to have the opportunity to appear before you on behalf of Northwest Airlines. Northwest is very proud to be Minnesota's hub airline. Mr. Chairman, the United States airline industry is at a crossroads, and it creates two choices for Northwest. One choice is to continue as we are as a standalone carrier, facing an unprecedented rise in oil prices, which will cost Northwest an estimated $1.4 billion more this year than last year, competing with discount carriers that now have captured almost one-third of the United States market, and internationally facing heightened competition from consolidated, well-funded foreign airlines that are increasing service to the U.S. under open skies agreements that have opened the U.S. market. The other choice is to merge with Delta to create a single, stronger airline better able to face these challenges. Delta and Northwest are the two strongest network carriers by every objective financial measure. By combining the end-to-end networks of these two great airlines, we will achieve over $1 billion in annual cost synergies and revenue improvements and be able to build a more comprehensive and balanced network. The combined company will be more financially resilient, better able to sustain jobs for our employees, and better able to sustain service to our communities, and better able to meet competition at home and abroad. From the outset, we promised that we would only consider a transaction if it would benefit our communities and our employees. We believe we have met that objective. Our employees and the communities we serve will be primary beneficiaries of this merger because the merger will make the airline service we provide and the jobs we support more secure. Minnesotans do not need to be reminded that the airline industry faces constant turmoil and financial challenges. Since 1990, when I first joined the airline, Northwest's communities and employees have repeatedly been put at risk of losing their service and their jobs by events such as the Gulf War, the recession of the early 90s, SARS, terrorism, the dot-com market crash and the recession that followed, and now skyrocketing oil prices. This inherent instability creates unacceptable levels of risk and uncertainty for our employees and our communities. Our primary objective in merging Northwest and Delta is to put the service we provide to our communities and the jobs we provide to the people we employ on the safest possible footing. This will be a merger of addition, not subtraction. Combining the complementary networks of the two carriers means that Delta and Northwest, as a combined entity, will serve more U.S. communities and connect to more worldwide destinations than any other airline. This will be the first U.S. flag carrier to have a truly global network, which will create value to our customers. Our communities and our employees will benefit from the improved financial resiliency and better competitive positioning of the combined carrier. $1 billion plus in annual synergies that the merger will create will help us withstand volatile fuel prices and cyclical downturns. The proposed combination also will allow us better to use Northwest's valuable Pacific franchise, better develop both carriers' domestic hubs, including Minneapolis-St. Paul, and better match the right planes with the right routes. Northwest has already integrated many aspects of its technology with Delta through the SkyTeam Alliance, paving the way for a smoother integration process. All of these benefits will be achieved without harming competition. No hubs will be closed. The domestic and international networks of Northwest and Delta are end-to-end, so the two carriers compete only to a minimal extent today. Domestically, Northwest's routes are concentrated in the Midwest, while Delta is strong in the Southeast and West. Internationally, Northwest is strong in Asia, while Delta has strength in Europe, Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East. Of the more than 800 domestic nonstop routes that Northwest and Delta collectively fly, there are only 12 nonstop city pair overlaps where we face each other in a head-to-head competition. The vast majority of these nonstop overlaps enjoy substantial competition from other carriers. The airline industry has become increasingly competitive throughout the U.S. over the past several years. Low-cost carriers have grown at an average annual rate of 11% since 2000 and now serve all major cities, including all major hubs. In addition, internet technology has created a transparency revolution. Consumers can now quickly and easily compare the offerings of competing carriers for any given route. Adjusted for inflation, airline fares are at least 30% lower today than they were 30 years ago when the industry was deregulated. For example, in 1979, the average round-trip fare between Minneapolis-St. Paul and Chicago was $106. Adjusted for inflation, that fare should have been $304 last year. Instead, the same fare was $178, 41% lower than 1979 in constant dollars. And that is typical of our long-haul routes from Minneapolis-St. Paul. In terms of the effect of this merger on airline fares and prices, we do not believe it will have any effect on airline fares. And none of the synergies that we project are predicated on the assumption that fares will increase. International markets will also remain intensely competitive. Today's foreign airlines carry more than half the traffic to and from the United States. Internationally, the combined carrier will have a broader network closer in scope to that which foreign flag carriers already possess. We will be better positioned as a combined carrier to compete effectively against foreign flag airlines, particularly for the business of corporate customers. Northwest did not come easily to the decision to merge with Delta. We are proud of our long history as a standalone carrier, and we have made Herculean efforts to continue operating independently. As part of our recent Chapter 11 reorganization, employees made substantial sacrifices to help Northwest remain in the air. As a result, in 2007, Northwest earned $760 million, $125 million of which went to our employees as profit sharing and incentive payments. Yet with fuel prices at record highs, our security is not assured, and action is required to put the airline on a safer footing for our employees and the communities we serve. We are aware that change is hard for everyone. Many of our employees, perhaps some people in this room today, have families who have worked at Northwest for generations. But the world is changing, and it will continue to change regardless of whether or not we merge. We believe that the worst alternative for our employees and our communities at this point in time could very well be to do nothing. 30 years ago, in one of the first noteworthy airline mergers, North Central and Southern combined to form Republic Airlines, which became the largest airline in the country at the time. In 1986, Northwest, then primarily known for international service, merged with Republic. At the time of deregulation in 1978, there were three international airlines in the U.S., Pan Am, TWA, and Northwest. Today, only Northwest has survived, and that was because only Northwest was able to acquire, through the Republic merger, a domestic route system to support its international routes. But for that merger and for the foresight that led to it, there would be no Northwest Airlines today, and we believe that we are at a similar decision point now. When Northwest emerged from Chapter 11 last year, oil was at $65 a barrel, and the economy seemed healthy. By the fall, however, oil prices had risen substantially, and the economy appeared to be slowing down. Consolidation, which had long made sense to us as a strategic matter, began also to make sense as a protection against the risk of rising oil prices and recession. At the end of the day, we concluded that the benefits of the right merger to our employees and our communities would be preferable to the risks of remaining standalone, and that by far the best merger partner for our employees and the communities we serve was Delta. With respect to how our employees will be affected by the merger, here is what Delta's CEO Richard Anderson has said, and I'm quoting a statement by Richard. "We will set aside sufficient equity so that all employees can have an unprecedented equity stake in the merged company." Delta has said that they are committing up to 10% of the equity of the new company to employees, and it will be granted outright at the time the transaction closes. "We will move all employees over time up to industry standard pay and benefits." And in that regard, I would note that historically within the industry, Delta has been the industry leader in pay and benefits. "We will honor our commitment to all U.S.-based frontline employees to provide a fair and equitable process of seniority integration. We will maintain the existing pension plans of both companies, both for current employees and for those already retired. We will maintain our top-tier profit-sharing plan and operational rewards program. We have assured our frontline people that there will not be any involuntary furloughs as a consequence of the merger. Again, that's Richard's words. I would note there that within the industry, Delta is known for rarely furloughing, if ever, frontline employees. I remember in the early 1980s when the industry went into recession and there were furloughs throughout the industry, Delta did not furlough anybody. And as a consequence and as a result of that, the employees actually bought an aircraft for Delta out of their own paychecks. It's a Boeing 767. And the last statement that Richard has made, particularly important in view of the impact on our industry of record fuel prices and economic uncertainty, we will strengthen our airline financially and provide opportunities for our people to benefit from our planned growth and future success. I'd say that on the basis of the conversations that we have had internally, Delta is also very well aware of the concerns of Minnesotans about the future of the Minneapolis-St. Paul hub and about future employment levels in Minnesota. While the specifics have not yet been worked out, Delta has committed to maintain significant jobs, facilities, and operations in Minnesota. In addition, Delta has pledged to maintain charitable contributions in Minnesota, comparable to Northwest's. If Minnesota is prepared to approach Delta in a spirit of partnership, we believe that Delta is prepared to work with the state to make specific commitments in the areas of jobs and in the area of hub operations. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to make this statement, and I will be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Any questions at this time? You're going to stick around.
I'm happy to.
Thank you very much. We do have to go remind everybody that we have to be out of here by noon. We're on have a floor session at noon. So, Senator Murphy.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Hurst, you work for Northwest, that's correct?
I do, yes, sir.
Okay. And Northwest, now, if I remember your testimony here, you said you made money last year?
We did. We made $760 million.
How much did Delta make?
I'm not sure of the exact number, Senator, but it was something in that range. They're a larger airline, and I think their profit was higher than ours.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hurst, I'm like a lot of other people in the room, very concerned about this, and I would like to know why Northwest isn't buying Delta.
Well, there are many reasons. Delta is a much larger airline, Senator. I think the first reason is that throughout the period when we've been considering consolidation, their market value, their equity value, has been substantially higher than ours. So financially, a simple transaction of the kind that we're doing here, which is a stock-for-stock exchange, would not be feasible financially. Delta very early on indicated that there were certain conditions to they're considering a consolidation with any airline, and these conditions grew out of commitments that they'd made to their employees and communities in fending off a hostile attempted acquisition early in 2007 by U.S. Airways. So we knew when we began talking to Delta that they had made commitments to only consider consolidation if the headquarters of the combined airline would remain in Atlanta and if the CEO of the airline would be their CEO and if the name was Delta. From our standpoint, when we considered the transaction, those conditions seemed to us to be much less important than the opportunity to put the jobs that the airline supports and the service we provide on a safer footing. And we thought the safest footing for the service and the employment that we support would be with Delta.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Hurst, can you explain to me how the merger is going to protect you from high fuel prices when Delta has to pay the same thing?
The merger, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Murphy, the merger creates value both from a cost perspective and a revenue perspective. Obviously, the price that the airline will pay for fuel will be the same. There's no advantage from that standpoint emerging. But the opportunities that are created when we merge our fleets create substantial revenue. The expansion of the network that occurs when we combine our two systems, in addition, improves our ability to compete for traffic, makes our product stronger, and will increase revenue. And there are cost opportunities that result from combining IT systems on a single platform, from combining stations so that we only have to have one single set of airport facilities in the cities we serve, from purchasing opportunities and the like, and from eliminating overlapping G&A overhead. Mm-hmm. And when we combine all these up, when we add them up, because the airlines are quite large, the total there is in the range of $1 billion or more annually, which will provide us a cushion that we don't now have as standalone carriers.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hearst, what is Northwest's plan on meeting their obligations with the state of Minnesota?
We have met all our obligations with the state, sir.
I think that might be disputable, but
well, there's a couple of covenants that I think we'll get into a little later. But
I'm happy to talk about the covenants.
You know, the 240 or whatever it is, and the other covenant that the headquarters has to stay here, and there's a third one. You'd like to.
If the question, Senator Murphy, is directed toward the covenants, be happy to discuss each of them. If you go back in history a bit to 1992. The Metropolitan Airports Commission sold $270 million of bonds and provided the proceeds to Northwest. And Northwest then became obligated to repay those bonds. And on a quarterly basis, Northwest has paid the bondholders without missing a payment, principal and interest, interest totaling about $345 million since 1992. And at this point, there is about $230 million left to pay on the bonds. By the end of 2009, that'll be about $212 million. As I said, Northwest has never missed a payment. Northwest is the paying party. The bondholders are people who bought the bonds and who now hold them. The state is not a lender, but without the credit support of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, that bond sale would have been at a higher rate of interest, and Northwest has been benefited by that. But Northwest, as I said, has met all its obligations on those bonds. There were three public policy covenants that Northwest agreed to in connection with the bond sale. The first related to the operation of the hub. Northwest pledged to maintain a hub operation, which means that at least 30% of the flights here will be connecting flights, with a minimum of at least 187 flights per day by aircraft larger than 70 seats. And Northwest has met that obligation throughout, continues to be in compliance with it. Northwest agreed to maintain its headquarters here, and Northwest is in compliance with that commitment and will be until well after the transaction closes, because Northwest's operating certificate will continue to be maintained by Northwest Airlines, Inc., which will continue to be headquartered here for some significant period of time, perhaps up to a year after the closing of the transaction. And then finally, there was an employment commitment which stated that Northwest would maintain approximately 17,000 jobs by itself, its affiliates, and its vendors in Minnesota. But that commitment and that number has been reduced as Northwest has shrunk generally within its across its system, as the agreement provided. So currently, Northwest's employment is at, I think, approximately 11,500 mainline employees, about 2,000 employees of our regional affiliates. And those numbers have been certified to the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and I think nobody has asserted that they do not comply with the covenant. Clearly, when the deal closes, Delta will succeed to those obligations. And if the headquarters moves to Atlanta, as the merger agreement provides, then at that point, Delta would not be in compliance with the headquarters covenant. Prior to that time, what we would anticipate happening is one of two things. Either Delta and the state would reach agreement on modifying the covenants to allow the bond issue to stay in place and to maintain commitments of service and employment by Delta to the state, or if Delta chose to do it, Delta could defease the bonds, in other words, pay off the bond issue. And by the terms of the agreement, that satisfies the covenants, and that's the end of that. But that decision doesn't have to be made really for quite some time.
I mean, it should be very clear that I think it's clear that the $230 million, if it's paid off, doesn't go into the state checking account. You know?
Right.
I mean, I think there's a little confusion out there that it's like money we get or something, but that's not the case. It goes to the people that paid for and bought the bonds. But I'd like to acknowledge that Senator Dibble is here with us today, and we're fortunate to have the minority leader of the Minnesota Senate, Senator Senjum, sitting with us. So that's to kind of show that this is pretty important stuff today. But Senator Carlson, do you have a question at this time?
Yes, I do. And I guess Senator Murphy asked the question pretty closely with what I wanted to ask first. But Mr. Chair and Mr. Hurst, first of all, I want to tell you that I've been a loyal Northwest user. And the Northwest has always presented to me a very good face. The employees have always been loyal employees. I have a lot of neighbors that work for Northwest, either worked or work for Northwest. And I have a sister that works for Northwest also. And over the years, and I have some things here that I'm just going to share a little bit of my original frequent, this was called the free flight plan. But then my Ozark card, my Frontier card, my People Express card, my American Airlines card, my United card, my Delta card, my Western card, and then when I my several Northwest cards, which conclude with a gold card. And I looked this morning, and my total mileage on Northwest, not all of them are flying miles, is 1,410,725. So I've flown a lot, and Northwest has always been my preferred flyer. Now, having said that, sometimes when you talk with Northwest employees, they will criticize their employer. And, you know, rather than feed into anything like that, I guess I want to say that we have always felt good about Northwest being here. And I think the entire legislature has been a supporter of Northwest, and certainly our past governors and present governor wants to keep you here. So whatever we can do, we want to be sure that we do. But we also realize that there's some things that are outside of our control. So, you know, having said that, I want to ask you a question that has nothing to do with it. I want to ask you, how many corporate entities do you have in Minnesota that are part of the Northwest consolidated balance sheet today?
You know, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I'm not sure I can answer that question off the top of my head. I can certainly get you an answer. The principal ones would be Mesaba Airlines, which is, and Compass Airlines, which are two wholly owned commuter subsidiaries. Although I'm not sure that Compass is incorporated here, I'd have to check. MLT Vacations is a subsidiary, and that's here. I think.
And how about those that are?
Off the top of my head.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hurst, how about like ownership of assets, ownership of intellectual property? Are those separate at all? Do you have like NWA Inc.?
That's now, there's the, a, there, the basic structure, sir, is that there is a holding company, Northwest Airlines Corporation. It's a Delaware corporation. And then the operating entity, Northwest Airlines Inc., is the Minnesota Corporation, is the entity that actually owns title to the aircraft and operates them.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Hurst, the employees are employees of that same company that has the aircraft?
Yes, sir. I believe that's correct.
Okay.
I think we're going to...
Thank you.
A couple more questions from Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hurst. I appreciate your responses, particularly about the hub. We're going to do what we can to keep a hub. You talked about service. You know, we want to do what we can to keep the number of flights in and out of Minneapolis, and of course, the jobs. You know, that is what we are here about. We're here about jobs. I want to talk, I guess I want to encourage you to talk a little bit about the decision about the headquarters. In the past, Minnesota has prided itself on being the home to so many Fortune 500 companies. This was a headquarters state, but we seem to be losing some of that. And I have a theory, but I want to have you respond briefly to the decision, the apparent decision, to have this new entity located in Georgia.
Let me, Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, let me say a word about the hub first, if I could, since you raised it. We think the hub will be strengthened by this transaction because behind Northwest's international route system to Asia and to Europe, which has increased really significantly over the last 20 years, will be Delta's domestic system, a very large domestic system in the southeast and the east. And so the traffic that's generated there will in part be able to support our operations here. And so we would expect over time that the hub will not only remain here, but will be strengthened and will grow. And the hub itself generates jobs. So the operating jobs that support the operations here will obviously remain. And although no specific decisions have been made, I believe that many of the other functions that support the airline, reservations functions, for example, will remain here as well. And to us, as we looked at the risks that the airline was facing in a world of increasing oil prices and potential recession, the most important consideration was to safeguard the hub and to safeguard jobs. And the location of the headquarters then, while an emotional issue, was really a secondary consideration from our standpoint. It paled in comparison to the importance of the hub and the jobs. When we, as I said earlier, when we began looking at potential merger partners, and one of the advantages that we had as a first mover was to have our pick of potential partners. Nobody was at least off the field. Delta clearly was the best partner for us because the networks fit perfectly together with no overlap, and we felt we would be able to combine the two airlines without closing hubs and without any furloughs that are directly caused by the merger. But to approach Delta meant that we had to accept the three conditions that I mentioned earlier, that the airline would be named Delta, that the CEO would be the CEO of Delta, and that the headquarters would be in Atlanta, because Delta had publicly taken that position before anybody spoke to them, certainly before we spoke to them. And we weighed that carefully before we began talking to them and concluded that the headquarters in this day and age was something that could be located pretty much any place. And there would be some impact on headquarters-related jobs if the headquarters were in Atlanta. obviously there would be an emotional sense of loss if the name of the airline changed. But where the headquarters is at the end of the day seemed to us to be much less important than safeguarding the hub and safeguarding employment here and putting our employment levels generally on safer harbor. And so that was the way the discussions began.
Okay, we've got to move along here.
Yeah.
Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, just a point then. No, I won't have any further questions for Mr. Hurst, but I would just note I appreciate that the jobs are more important than the headquarters. The jobs are what we need to focus on. But, Mr. Chair, the math is very easy to do here. The business income tax rate that we charge in Minnesota is 9.8%, and Georgia's is 6. So 9.8 versus 6. Whether you're an airline, whether you're a small business, if you have a choice, if you have a choice to move, if you have a choice to expand, what are you going to do? Mr. Chair, that's what this legislature controls, is that kind of a tax rate. And we are now a high tax state in flyover land. We're in a recession, and we are raising taxes. We're adding regulations. So this kind of news is a consequence of that. So I would hope, Mr. Chairman,
I don't think that's the reason that's happening. I can't speak for that. I don't think the rate is the driving factor of where the hub's going to be. They're twice as big. It's well. Anyway, I don't know. That could be just my opinion and a part of it, but not a major part. But Senator Saltzman, then Senator Tomasoni, then we're going to. We've heard from Wall Street. We've heard from the business community, but I want to hear from Main Street, and that is the people on the front line and the workers out there. And I think we've had a lot of discussion already with the corporate folks. But with that, Senator Saltzman and Tomasoni, and then we're going to move on.
That same line, just briefly, Mr. Chair. We can do this with a carrot or a stick, and we've certainly had discussion about we're very saddened to see Northwest perhaps leaving this state with its corporate headquarters. But you mentioned, Mr. Hurst, you said the spirit of partnership, that Delta would be, I think we would all like to be part of that partnership. So perhaps as Senator Michelle just spoke about in a more positive way, how can we be part of that? What kind of spirit do you want to see from the state, from the legislature regarding this? Can you give us a few things just to kind of get us thinking here about what a partnership means? And I did read an article in the paper a couple days ago, a week ago, about what kind of role could Minnesota play as being perhaps the technology center for the airlines. I mean, where are our great strengths at? And I think about Minnesota, why we've been the corporate headquarters is because of, you know, the people who are here, and that we've had one of the most hardworking and intelligent workforces in the world. How do we build on that? Can you just share a few examples? I know our time is brief. So,
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hurst. Senator Saltzman, happy to take a crack at that. You know, Delta wants to be Minnesota's hub airline just as Northwest is today. When we spoke with Delta about this transaction, one of the great assets that Northwest brought to the table was the Minnesota hub. Richard Anderson, who's the CEO at Delta, still has house here. He's lived here since 1990. He knows the community very, very well. He's a member of the Medtronics board and Cargill board. I know that Richard wants to maintain a very significant presence here, and I know that he wants to sit down and talk with the state about how to do that, how best to do that. And the context in which that conversation is likely to take place is in the context of the public policy covenants connected to the bond agreement that Senator Murphy referred to. And I think if those discussions proceed in a responsible and productive way, that Richard will be very open, Delta will be very open to trying to find ways to make its presence felt in a positive way. You mentioned information technology. It's certainly true that we have a very strong information technology group at Northwest, and that's another asset that the airline brings to the combination. And I would certainly like to see and those jobs have to be located someplace. If you combine the two IT platforms, they've got on a single platform, they've got to be someplace. I think that's a conversation that could be had with Delta.
Senator Tomasoni, then we're going to move
Thank
on
you,
to
Mr.
the
Chairman.
Machinists.
Mr. Hurst, you know, a baseball analogy might be that when the owner of the team says to the press that even though the team's not going very well, I'm not going to fire the manager, and then the next day the manager gets fired. I've heard, this is just an assurance I want out of you, okay? I've heard that the Chisholm Reservation Center is not on the chopping block, and I just want to get that on the record here, that is been one of the jewels of the airline since it's been opened, and that it's been performing very well. And I want to get an assurance out of you that there's no intention of closing that reservation center. And the second thing I wanted to know about is the access to rural airports, such as Hibbing International Falls, and that what are the plans for those airports as far as keeping access in rural Minnesota?
Okay, good. Mr. Hurst, yes, good question.
I'll try to be brief because I know it's taking too much time as it is. Senator Tomasoni, we do view that the Chisholm Reservation Center is one of the jewels of the airline. As I was saying earlier, I was involved in establishing it. It was actually my idea internally. When it became apparent that we couldn't go forward with the engine repair facility for economic reasons in Duluth, the question came up, what else could we do for northern Minnesota? And it seemed to me that a reservation center in northern Minnesota would have many advantages to Northwest, in addition to being helpful to the community, and that they have an excellent workforce, and we'd be able to draw people from a pretty wide geographic area, and it would be beneficial for everybody. And it's turned out that way. The Chisholm facility now services our elite customers. It employs about 500 people. We've maintained our employment levels such that the loan from the IRRB that built it has been fully paid down. The future of that, I don't believe the future of that reservation center is in doubt. There's no intent to close it, but I think you should talk to Delta specifically and get a specific commitment from Delta. I believe they'll be prepared to testify before your committee if you're interested in talking to them. And secondly, with respect to service to International Falls and to other cities in Minnesota, there's no intention to
Hibbing. You keep saying Hibbing.
Hibbing. Okay. There's certainly no intention to change that. That service is an important element in making the hub work, and one of the strengths of Northwest Airlines is the service that it provides to small communities throughout the Upper Midwest, and there is no intent to change that.
And Mr. Chairman, one quick last question. Your testimony painted kind of a rosy picture for the future employees of the merged company. How many jobs do you see Minnesota losing as a result of this?
That one, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, to some degree, I'll have to defer to conversations that you might have with Delta. We're just beginning to think through, from a bottoms-up perspective, exactly what facilities will remain here and, therefore, what job levels will remain here. As I said earlier, I think those conversations can be productive in terms of the jobs that result. The combination of the two headquarters into one group will, Delta has said, reduce overall employment between the two headquarters by perhaps as much as 1,000, but I think that's, even at this stage, something of a guess. So I would hesitate to give you a number. I do think that the result Both parties sit down in a productive manner will be that the jobs will be similar in scale and scope to what's here now.
Yeah, that headquarters certainly is a big concern of the chair and Senator Carlson, because they're out in Eagan in the district I represent, and we're contiguous to Senator Carlson, so that's a big concern. Senator Bonnef, and then Dibble, and then we got to move on. I just want to hear from the folks.
And I should say, Mr. Chairman, that I personally appreciate your concern about the headquarters jobs.
Yeah, that's right, too. You might be in Atlanta.
That's right.
Senator Bonnef.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hurst, I just wanted to make a comment on the article in today's paper with regard to, your chairman's $18.3 million payout that, is being talked about. And I think that the public has just become increasingly dissatisfied with these types of deals where, because of supposed, changing economic conditions that a company has to go through, a merger or an acquisition, and then so many people lose their jobs, and it really changes life for so many people, and it impacts a community and a culture, and yet, the person at the top has a windfall. And we don't get to say, we don't get to say whether or not that's the right compensation package or it's not, because that's not the role of the legislature. But I do want Northwest Airlines to know that the people I represent, they object to that, and that they don't think that that's what's right, and that that there ought to be consideration of that this is going to be painful. No matter how you say it, people are losing their jobs. It is going to have an impact on our community, and we don't want to see that kind of a huge payout going towards this effort. So I wanted to let you know that is the sentiment in the community.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Just a simple question. We know a lot about the loans and the terms of the loan that was negotiated in 1992, but also, there are some provisions in the renegotiated lease conditions, the terms of the lease at MSP, and the headquarters subject came up in that conversation. But that was a source of a tremendous negotiation, and what we consider to be a headquarter was parsed pretty finely, and that arrangement I think was arrived at just within a year, maybe slightly over a year ago. When did you first start talking to Delta about this merger?
Okay, Mr.
Hurst. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble. We first started talking to Delta in early December of 2007. An initial meeting, and then a second meeting after we'd done some comparative staff work in early January.
So there are no preliminary negotiations or overtures or conversations or efforts prior to this whole lease, rearranging this lease, terms of this lease at MSP?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, let me back up a bit if I could. There had been various occasions going back to, I think, 2005, when Northwest and Delta had conversations about possible combinations. And they ended, as I recall, in the initial set of contacts, they ended quickly in 2005. And then I wasn't involved personally in these, so I apologize if I'm a little vague. And then again in late 2006, I think, there were some discussions while the airlines were both in Chapter 11. And they ended when U.S. Airways made a hostile takeover attempt of Delta. And then there was a period of time where there was no contact at all. Those discussions didn't go very far. They were very preliminary, and I don't believe they resulted in a data exchange or anything rigorous. My understanding, and Kathleen, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the discussion with the airport about the rate base there, the rate structure, proceeded totally independently and had no relationship whatsoever to the conversations with Delta. Be happy to talk about that rate adjustment, if you like, if that was part of your question.
I think we'll... Mr. Hurst will be here for a while, so...
Happy to. I seem to recall, though, Mr. Chair, that the beginnings of this elaborate choreograph with Delta, I think we had some indication back at that time that that something was going on. That was subject of a lot of inquiry in this room at a different hearing. You know, aren't you guys about to merge? And, you know, why are we doing this? And why are we announcing big expansions and that sort of thing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, just quickly, I wasn't with the airline for that period of time. I joined the airline in 1990. I left in 2000, and I came back last summer. But I've talked to people about those conversations. I've been told that they were very preliminary at each stage. They didn't really get very far at all.
Thank you.
Okay, I think with that, thank you. And we're going to get right on to the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Mr. Gordon, President, directing the General Chair of District 143. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Stephen Gordon, President, Directing General Chair of District 143. I'd like to begin by thanking the Chair and the members for this committee for offering the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers the opportunity to express our concerns regarding the proposed merger of Delta and Northwest Airlines. As I previously stated, my name is Stephen Gordon. I'm the President, Directing General Chair of IAM 143, which represents the employees of Northwest Airlines and a number of other airlines. Excuse me. Seated next to me is our Legislative Director, Lisa Stager, who is well known to many of you. At Northwest Airlines, we represent a diverse group of 12,500 hardworking and skilled reservation agents, ticket agents, customer service agents, World Club agents, quality service agents, fleet service employees, equipment service employees, stock clerks, clerical, flight simulator technicians, as well as sky caps. The IAM is by far the largest union on Northwest property today and the largest union in the airline industry. We come before you today because we are firmly convinced, as are many experts in the field, that if the merger between Delta and Northwest Airlines is permitted to go forward, it will inevitably result in massive job loss, dislocation, consolidation, and closures, which will have devastating effect on airline employees, their families, and their communities here in Minnesota and throughout the Northwest system. In addition, industry experts predict that this merger will unleash a final round of merger mania. The remaining carriers such as United Airlines, Continental, American, U.S. Airways, and Southwest, among others, in reaction will in turn merge with each other and reduce our country's once proud airline industry down to three major carriers. This will open the door to unrestrained elimination of service and the rise in ticket prices and the further elimination of airline jobs, which are some of the few jobs left in America that pay a living wage and health insurance. Amazingly, Northwest and Delta's top executives claim that if their merger is approved, they will simply move the headquarters to Atlanta. They claim no hubs will be closed, no employees will be involuntarily laid off, but nevertheless, the new company will enjoy unprecedented success. They either take the American people and their own employees for fools or think we suffer from amnesia and don't remember what has happened in recent mergers. We aren't buying the bait-and-switch routine because we have lived through mergers before. It was not long ago that the nightmarish American Airlines and TWA merger was approved, which swallowed TWA, virtually eliminated St. Louis hub, and resulted in the termination of the majority of TWA employees, despite Americans' previous assurances to the contrary. The recent merger between U.S. Airways and America West has also resulted in extensive job loss and a downsizing of U.S. Airways' former Pittsburgh hub to a very small fraction of flights it used to have. If this merger is approved, the combined carrier will begin with approximately 80,000 employees. Delta's Atlanta hub and Northwest Memphis hub are less than 400 miles apart. Delta has a hub in Cincinnati, while Northwest has one 300 miles away in Detroit. Do they really expect us to believe that Memphis and Cincinnati will not be closed, that no service will be eliminated, and no employees will be terminated? Yet they will save billions of dollars through the efficiencies through this merger. Do they think fuel prices will be cut in half just because there are half as many airlines? Is it too much to believe that you're going to go through this massive and extremely costly undertaking simply to maintain the status quo? The reality is that the merger will have a dramatic negative impact on the Twin Cities, our smaller communities, and on the economy on the entire state of Minnesota. Not surprisingly, Northwest executives have downplayed the economic hardship that will befall the people of Minnesota and the 12,000-plus men and women of Northwest employees in this state. While Delta claims that jobs to be eliminated, quote, involuntarily, will be on the management administrative side, which is simply today's fairy tale. Delta CEO Richard Anderson, who we recall was Northwest CEO not long ago, has insisted that Northwest headquarters be moved to Atlanta following the merger. Thus, many of the 2,300 employees who work at the Northwest headquarters or other Egan facilities are in jeopardy of losing their employment. In addition, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce predicts that a merger would also likely result in the loss of 500 jobs at the Chisholm Base Reservation Center. You can imagine the impact this will have on the struggling Iron Range economy. Those jobs provide a living wage and are essential to the economies of Chisholm, Virginia, and Hibbing, and other nearby communities. The loss of jobs in the Twin Cities, Egan, and Chisholm, and elsewhere will seriously hurt those workers and their families who rely on those jobs, not to mention the retail economy and the housing markets in those areas. These layoffs will have a ripple effect because it's estimated that for every one airline job lost in a community, four other related or dependent vendor, service, and retail jobs will be lost. Moreover, Minnesota political and union leaders are well aware of Northwest's dismal track record on making and breaking promises regarding potential job cuts and the impact of the state revenue picture. Remember when the state bailed out Northwest to the tune of $761 million in 1992, and the airline promised to build an engine maintenance facility in Duluth with a minimum of 500 new jobs? Well, Northwest had a change of heart in 1994 and scrubbed the plans for the Duluth maintenance facility. However, Northwest still owes the Metropolitan Airport Commission approximately $245 million from the loan, which is supposed to be paid immediately if Northwest relocates its headquarters outside of Minnesota. Where are they going to get the $245 million, which will become immediately payable? I would not be surprised if they try to stiff Minnesota the way under Richard Anderson at the time, stiff their own employees by reneging on their agreement to redeem the Series C stock that they issued in exchange for wage concessions that they obtained from us and our members during the early 1990s. They also promised to continue to employ at least 1,000 workers in Duluth, but instead closed their operation there in 2005. Do you remember when Northwest promised to keep employment levels at the state at the then current levels of 18,000 employees, which is now down to approximately 12,000? They have left a trail of broken promises throughout the state, and if the merger is approved, there will be many more to come. Just over a year ago, Delta Airlines testified in Washington, D.C., trying to block a takeover from U.S. Airways. Its CEO at the time said that if a merger is approved, it would trigger broad industry consolidation, which would harm consumers in a number of communities. He testified that a Delta merger would not be in the best public interest. Besides the price of fuel, what has changed today? There's no question that the lobbyists, the hedge funds, Wall Street, and top executives are approaching Northwest Airlines like sharks in a feeding frenzy at the thought of multiple million dollars in fees, points, stock options, and golden parachutes, while their employees and their communities will be left with the skeletal remains. According to Wall Street Journal, Doug Steelen stands to gain the most by handing Northwest over to Delta. He has only led Northwest since October of 2004, can bail from Northwest with a very substantial golden parachute package. He will receive a minimum of $7.8 million if he gives up control to Richard Anderson, the current CEO of Delta. This is on top of the $26 million in stock options he's already received as a result of the Northwest bankruptcy. We don't begrudge Mr. Steelen an honest day's wage for an honest day's work. But to sell out your own employees who, with their hard work and sacrifice, made him rich beyond all reason is unconscionable. It's also become clear that Northwest has refused to engage in discussions with the IAM or any other employee group, with the exception of the pilots, to address how the employees fit into the merger plans. There's a reason why we've been ignored. We are firmly convinced but by their conduct that Northwest intends to sacrifice the many of its employees to make this merger go with a largely and adamantly non-union Delta. With its headquarters in the Deep South, Delta intends to continue to battle unionization and will stop at nothing to maintain their plantation style of management. Finally, I want to make this committee aware of the human toll Northwest Tactics have already had on members that we represent. Through its bankruptcy proceedings, Northwest obtained a court order to force our members to give up 19% of their pay and their wages. This caused many Minnesota families to struggle for basics like mortgages, rent, gas, and groceries. Later, by agreement, that was reduced by 11.5% across the board wage reduction, which amounts to $190 million per year from our membership in wage concessions to Northwest Airlines over the next 5 years. Our wages have gone down while consumer prices have risen, but by contrast, total executive compensation has gone off the charts. Yet we're recently told by a Northwest senior vice president of labor relations that, unlike the pilots, we're not invited to the table to negotiate about this merger because, in the scheme of things, we're insignificant. How dare this company take our $190 million annually to balance their checkbook to save this airline and then say that we're non-significant? Our members have had it, and we're not going to take this lying down. They've put many of years of sweat equity in this company, have worked harder for less to ensure the survival of Northwest, and this is the thanks we get. We're referred to as insignificant. The American people, and particularly those of Minnesota, have a right to know how much the few stand to gain and how many stand to lose from the elimination of Northwest Airlines through this ill-conceived transaction. We urge you to stand by us in the struggle. I thank each of the committee and the chair, and I'm available for questions.
The biggest reason for me to be holding these hearings is to protect the jobs of our folks out here. So that's where we're all concerned. And, you know, I know you a lot of strong statements and it's heartfelt, but that's why we're going through this exercise. And it might even take another day. I just got to thinking that now that we're at 11:15 and there's so much to be told here that I don't want to cut anybody off, okay? So... And with that, Senator Murphy, did you have a question of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gordon, the employees at Delta are represented by several different unions. Can you tell me what they are?
That's, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, that's inaccurate. The only labor organization on Delta Airlines is the Airline Pilots Association.
Were you talking about Delta or both, or Delta U.S.? Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, then thank you, Mr. Gordon. And, you know, I can understand your hesitation to get on board with this and your outright opposition to it. Many of us feel the same way. You know, earlier we heard Mr. Hurst talk about it's Delta's intention to keep significant employment levels here in our state. And that may be, but until Delta comes to the table and tells me that, you know, I'm not going to believe it, period. And especially coming from Northwest Airlines, you know, in regards to the covenant, I don't believe they ever met their employment levels under any of the covenants. I was elected in 92. First served in 93, so I wasn't part of the first bailout, but I was part of the second one. And at that time, you know, the legislature was given several assurances, all of which with this are going to be broken, in my opinion. Mr. Gordon, there's many of us here in the legislature that just are plain not happy with this. And I take it as a personal affront when Mr. Steenland came in front of our committee last May of 06 and said that the airline was struggling, but we're strong, the future looks promising, and we're in this for the long haul. And then less than a month later, him, Al Checkey, and Mr. Wilson all sold off a bunch of stock. I don't think that that spoke very good for the upper management level of the organization. Mr. Chairman, as the chair of the Transportation Committee, we may not have complete jurisdiction over this issue in transportation, but we've got a little piece of it, and we will be having hearings throughout the summer and the fall as this moves forward in our committee. And just so Northwest and Delta are on notice here, our committee was probably going to be a little more aggressive.
Thank you.
We've asked Delta on a couple of occasions to come up here, and for whatever reason, they haven't. They weren't able to come up, but now I've got the assurance that Delta will come up here in the next few days. So I think that's very important to hear from.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
and then our questions will probably be more accurately answered at that point. Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and the reason why I asked the question about the represented members at Delta. It's for the union people in this room. I mean, Delta has been obviously hostile to union organizations for the career of that airline's history. I mean, I just don't think that this is going to work out very well for the state of Minnesota. And, I mean, look at the folks here. I would probably say, and this is just my own estimation, that half the folks that are wearing the Northwest uniform today aren't going to be wearing it. Well, they won't be employed by an airline this time next year.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Go ahead.
I want to make a comment that was briefly touched on. We seem to be focused on jobs, and clearly as this union is as well. However, it's a vast disparity between a jobs and a career. We're not looking for jobs at $9 an hour for Delta Global Services. We're looking for livable wage jobs with medical benefits, a defined pension plan, and a future. We can talk jobs all day long. Someone once told me the acronym for job stands for just over broke. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking to be a viable part of the communities of the surrounding areas of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and all across the system. So for individuals to just loosely mention the word jobs, there's far too.
We're not loosely talking about jobs. Well, please, it's kind of a little. Maybe I'm too sensitive here. We're here to help you.
I understand.
Okay, and I just resent a little bit the tone because I want to help you folks. That's why we're here, and I'm kind of getting it the wrong way. Probably it's just me, but we're here to help. So keep
that
on the top burner as you speak. Okay.
Right.
I mean, I'm from South St. Paul, Minnesota. We lost 7,000 packing plant jobs in 1969 and 1972 when Armors and Swifts were 7,000 union-paying jobs. Parking cars for Swift & Company at the time, and I worked at Armor & Company for 3 years. And it was in our roots in South St. Paul, Minnesota. So I understand losing jobs. So I sympathize with you a bit. The headquarters has 1,000 jobs in Eagan that aren't my people, but they're people that are in the district I represent, and I don't know, 300, 400, 500 probably live in Mendota, Lilydale, Denver Grove, South St. Paul. I don't know that. And they're going to be probably out the door. So to say that we're not sympathetic, and I think hopefully I can speak for the whole committee that we are.
Right.
We're with you. So
I appreciate
that's
that.
Why I think if we get dealt in here, which we're going to now. I've been assured we can, and then we'll go through this and get some hard facts from them, okay? So that should help you. So go continue on. I didn't mean to get so excited, but we're here to help, I think.
I hope, Mr. Chair, I didn't convey it that way. I just think it's important to focus on, because what we have not been invited to the table to have discussion about these jobs, whether they're $9 an hour or $18 an hour. And this is the concern that when we read and we hear the company's commitment to provide jobs, at what level are those jobs? That was I was trying to reiterate.
Yeah, that's legitimate. That's good. Yeah, that's fine. But just want to assure you we're not here to hurt anybody.
Trust me, so. I know that.
Okay, why don't we,
Senator
Shy?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask, do we have any actual data on what jobs and or or I should say wages and salaries
the comparison
are by comparison for the same job? I mean, I'd like to see something in
writing,
actually.
Yeah, that's a good point. I see how we'll find that out either today, or we're going to have another hearing.
I think it's really important. I'd like to hear the folks from the airlines
are making notes of your question, and so I think that's legitimate. And I again, I apologize if I get too excited, but we're trying to help. Okay, you're done, Mr. Gordon?
Yes.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Because I want to hear from others, too, and the other unions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Before Mr. Gordon goes, his testimony is very disturbing. And the history of what's happened here is I think he got hit it right on the head. And if we can do anything, I think for sure we've got to make sure that the employees are involved in the eventual merger and the negotiations of what ends up happening, because it's very, very important that we don't lose these jobs, because these are the kind of jobs that people have set their lives. They've been working all their lives at these jobs and planning on a career, not just the job. And at some point in time, I firmly believe that if we can do something, then we've got to make sure that they are involved in the final negotiations.
I agree. That's well spoken.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The flight attendants, CWA, Renee Voss, welcome.
Hi,
to the committee.
Thank you.
That wasn't too rough on Gordon. We'll be very.
I'm a little scared.
We'll be. Well, so am I. I look at all these. We're all a little scared.
All right,
scared of what's happening and what could happen, but we want the best out of it that we could get. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen, and the committee members for the opportunity to speak with you. With me today is Kevin Griffin. He's the president of the Association of Flight Attendants at Northwest Airlines. And I also want to acknowledge all my union brothers and sisters that are here today from the IAM and the AFA, and I'm glad we can all be together here. My name is Renee Foss, and I'm a lifelong resident of Minnesota. I'm a graduate of Edina High School and a graduate of the University of Minnesota. I've been a flight attendant with Northwest for 23 years, and I'm also a proud member of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. I've survived a previous merger here before, bankruptcy, recently a 40% cut in my pay and my benefits, and today I just want to talk a little bit about my past before I begin to talk about my concerns for the future. My mother was an airline stewardess for Northwest Airlines. She flew from 1951 to 1959. And back then they had a policy that the airline stewardesses had to quit when they got married or turned age 32. So when my mom turned age 32, she got married, amazingly enough, and left Northwest. And many people assume that the reason I became a flight attendant in the first place was because of my mother. And the actual truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, I never wanted to be a flight attendant, and I didn't want to work in the airline industry. I wanted to be an actress in New York City, but my dad put the kibosh on that. He said, absolutely not. You're getting a good job with good benefits with a good company that has a pension and job security. And I'll tell you something. At 22 years old, that's the last thing you want to hear. I was interested in show business, and I didn't care about a good job with benefits. But since that time, I have grown up, and I have changed my tune, ladies and gentlemen. And today, I cannot tell you how much I value my father's advice and my job at Northwest Airlines. And I confess in the beginning, I thought it might be a temporary arrangement, something that I would do for a couple of years. But over time, this has become my career and my profession. And up until recently, I felt very secure and very happy with my good job and benefits. This is now leading to my concerns for the future. And this is not just my future that I'm talking about, but the future of all my brother and sister flight attendants at Northwest and Delta Airlines and the CWA also, all the frontline employees, the citizens of my home state, Minnesota, and the traveling public at large. I'm not an economist, so I cannot say whether the merger is going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I don't have a position as to whether I'm for it or against it. But all I can do at this point is review the past experiences. And if the past is any indicator of the future, I would urge all of you to remember and consider some of the past promises from Northwest and ask yourself if they have, in fact, been upheld. I'd like you to please remember the large amounts of money that the state of Minnesota has lent Northwest. I'd like you to also remember our former mechanics that had their jobs outsourced, the maintenance base in Duluth. And now, as you listen to more promises that we're hearing, no layoffs, no hub closures, no decreases in service, and no outsourcing, I just want to point out that if these promises are broken, it will be too late for me and my coworkers and the communities of this state. And this is something that's very important that I'd like to draw your attention to. We've had some reference to it earlier. We are very concerned about the election for union representation that is taking place with the Delta Airlines flight attendants. The Delta Airlines flight attendants are currently a non-union group. And recently, they have filed cards with the National Mediation Board to have a representational election. And they have every legal right, ladies and gentlemen, to organize, and we support their efforts. Yet Delta executives have launched an extensive anti-union campaign aimed at keeping Delta flight attendants from voting in this election for a union. Senator Edward Kennedy has authored a letter to Mr. Richard Anderson, who is Delta's current CEO and the formerly served in the same position at Northwest. Senator Kennedy's letter has been co-signed by 26 other distinguished senators in the United States. This letter requests Delta executives to allow the election to proceed without interference from management. We have a copy of the letter here, and I'd like you to please take a look at it. Still, even after this letter was written and received, we are hearing reports of Delta flight attendants being harassed and intimidated in the voting process. This intimidation and harassment must be stopped immediately. Delta has made it clear they anticipate only one union on the property, and that is ELPA. That's the pilots' union. It seems their agenda at Delta is to eliminate our union, the Association of Flight Attendants. And I know that I speak for many flight attendants when I say our collective bargaining rights and our jobs must be protected in any merger. If Delta flight attendants remain non-union, then our union representation at Northwest will be jeopardized when and if this merger is finalized. And we are very concerned about the outsourcing of our flight attendant jobs to potential bases in China or India or anywhere outside of the United States. We're very concerned about outsourcing. And if we don't have a union to protect that, it's a real serious situation. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are many other elements to the Northwest Delta merger. And in closing, I would just ask you all to please carefully examine, and then I ask you to re-examine these elements. I ask you to hold the executives legally accountable for what they promise us, so that they cannot destroy our company, our livelihoods, our union, our state's economy, and then have a good laugh about it at a cocktail party 5 years from now when they walk away with very generous multi-million dollar bonuses. I ask you to demand that they stop interfering with the Delta flight attendants' legal right to organize. And lastly, I ask you to please honor my dad's hope that his daughter could have a good job with good benefits, job security, and a pension. And thank you very much. And Kevin Griffin will take any questions.
I think you could have been an actress.
I am.
You did a nice job. Sir, did you wish to comment or take questions? Any questions of these folks? Those are well stated points you made, I think. Okay, I guess you're off the hook now. Thanks for nice job.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to hear now from Dan McElroy, the Commissioner of Department of Employment and Economic Development. And we did invite the governor, but he had other commitments, but apparently he has some written remarks for the committee and the audience, I believe. Welcome, Mr. McElroy, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And I'd like to do two things. First of all, I have prepared a copy and would like to read a statement from the governor. I am sorry that he wasn't able to be here today, but he does take this issue very seriously. And thanks both the House and Senate on both sides of the political aisle for their bipartisan cooperation in dealing with this important issue. The governor's statement is as follows. As we consider the proposed merger of Northwest and Delta, it is my hope the legislature will join with my administration on a bipartisan basis as we work to protect Minnesota's interests during the course of merger proceedings. Our goal is to maintain hub operations, related levels of flight service, and the maximum number of airline jobs possible in Minnesota. We believe our highly skilled workforce, efficient airport, and central location are assets that work in our favor. In addition, there are at least two major opportunities for us to influence the process. The first opportunity is by utilizing the leverage we have, the existing agreements between Northwest and the Metropolitan Airports Commission. These total approximately $245 million in loans and $200 million in future lease concessions. In exchange, Northwest is committed to keep their hub and headquarters in Minnesota. I have expressed to the CEOs of Northwest and Delta that it is our expectation that the merged entity will honor those commitments. The second opportunity is by weighing in during the U.S. Department of Justice review process. We have made it clear that we intend to reserve judgment until the merged entity specifies its commitment to Minnesota regarding hub operations, headquarters, and employment levels. We asked the airline to provide us with details, and they have committed to getting that information to us. My administration is committed to protecting Minnesota's interests and intends to do so aggressively. Thank you for the opportunity to share these remarks with the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, further, the Department of Employment and Economic Development is involved in two ways. We operate the Office of Labor Market Information and Economic Analysis for the state and are involved in assessing the economic impact of events such as this proposed merger. And we operate programs to assist workers in the event of what we describe as dislocations. The airline calls them furloughs. Most people call them layoffs. And we take them very seriously. I want to make clear that our great concern is the workers and their families. Whenever someone loses their job, their personal unemployment rate is 100%, and we take that seriously. We also take the uncertainty facing Northwest and their affiliated companies' employees in the time that it will take Northwest and Delta to work out the details. And we, our commitment is to fight and compete for every single job. And when Richard Anderson and Doug Steenland indicate that 1,000 jobs are at risk, we should not assume that those have to be Minnesota jobs or that that number is cast in stone. And so this is a case where we need to sell the Minnesota advantages. There are three things at risk here. As has been said, the hub is an issue. But the evidence is that this is one of the best hubs in North America, maybe in the world, because of its geographic location at the center of North America, because of its proximity to the North Pole routes to Europe and Asia. And you will be surprised to hear, given our weather, it is one of the most reliable hubs in North America in terms of hours it's available during the year because it is not generally subject to fog. It has a cost per in-plane passenger in the bottom half of comparable airports in the world. It has an excellent reputation among passengers. It has a substantial market position. Northwest enjoys something over 70% market share in passenger numbers and probably 80% in the value of ticket lift because they have longer haul flights from Minneapolis-St. Paul. It has been described in the industry and by Northwest at times as a fortress hub. The hub is a we shouldn't take our hub for granted, but it is an outstanding facility. For many years, Northwest listed the Minneapolis-St. Paul MSP hub as a strategic asset. We believe it's a strategic asset for any entity that operates here. We are much more concerned about the headquarters jobs, and we're disappointed that we didn't have an opportunity to make our case to the Delta Board. We may continue to try to make our case to the Delta Board. We believe that board has a fiduciary obligation to their stockholders to maximize the opportunities as to where their headquarters is located. This is a great place to run an international company. There are more Fortune 500 companies per capita in Minneapolis-St. Paul than in any other metropolitan area in the country. MarketWatch.com, national business website, listed Minneapolis-St. Paul as the best metropolitan area in North America in which to do business in 2007. We are would like to have the opportunity to fight for every job. There, we have been asked to assess the Chairman, economic Mr. impact Chairman. Of
Senator,
this merger.
Excuse me, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. McElroy,
can we get all that in writing so that I can
make sure that Senator Michelle sees those statistics and blow them up in big, bold letters?
Yeah. We'll continue on. I kind of hit on that a little bit earlier, but nobody was listening to me. But now the pencils are going off. Senator McElroy, continue.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you for the promotion.
What did I call you?
Senator.
You promoted him.
You want to switch paychecks? We'll. You could have the senator title, and we'll no. Okay, we're just having a little. We like to mix up a little fun once in a while, with the serious situations going on.
We appreciate that,
Commissioner McElroy.
We have looked at the economic impact of the merger, and as I say, it is principally on the individuals whose jobs are at risk. The metropolitan area has about 1.65 million jobs, and the state has about 2.7 million jobs. The gross payroll in the state, I don't have the gross payroll in the state at the moment. I do have the gross domestic, gross state product, which is slightly higher than the payroll, but it is not orders of magnitude higher, and it's approximately $280 billion. The representative of AMPA indicated that they believe there is a multiplier effect that's a little higher than our models indicate. We use two economic modeling tools, one called IMPLAN, the Impact Modeling Plan, and another called RUPI, R-U-P-I, that are fairly well-established, nationally used, nationally normed models. And we believe the multiplier is that there are two non-airline jobs impacted for each airline job, and so that a loss of 1,000 direct jobs it has impact of about 3,000 jobs.
Now go through that again. That's pretty important statement. I got it, but I want to hear it again.
We use two national models, two recognized economic analysis models, the principal one being called IMPLAN, I-M-P-L-A-N. Based on the types of jobs these are and their pay levels, the multiplier, or the impact at Northwest, approaches that of manufacturing, and it is higher than other service jobs. And so we estimate, based on the model, that the loss of 1,000 jobs at Northwest, headquarters-level jobs, probably impacts 2,000 other jobs. And so there's a total impact of about 3,000 jobs. There has been speculation in the media or estimates in the media that there are approximately that the average pay and benefits of the headquarters jobs approaches $80,000. Which means the impact of 1,000 jobs is $80 million. We think that the impact after the multiplier is approximately $300 million. So it's extremely significant to those families, and we don't want to underestimate it as having an impact on the region. Mr. Chairman, it's premature to talk about programs that can assist laid-off workers, but I want to assure union representatives here, Northwest employees and their communities, that if we are not as successful in fighting for jobs as we hope to be, there are state resources supplementing federal resources to assist through our state dislocated workers program, through the Job Skills Partnership Program to assist in job training, and through other programs. We may also try to get and would hope for cooperation from Delta and Northwest and Mr. Hurst's testimony that international competition is an issue, we would try to get layoffs certified as being impacted under the Federal Trade Adjustment Act to get additional resources to help laid-off employees. We'll know more about that as we know the exact nature of layoffs, if they occur, and the skills and needs of those who may be laid off. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. Last fall, Mr. Chair, when we had the devastating floods in our state, it took a lot of negotiation to bring us together for a special session. And as we hear testimony today, and we don't know a lot of the details, but you've talked, and I'm very pleased to see the governor stand that he wants to fight for every job. I hope that if along the way we see that there is opportunities or a need for the legislature to be involved and we're not in session, that there will not be a hesitation to bring us together to address any issues. And I think that Senator Cohen has already mentioned that, not to say that there needs to be a special session on this, but along the way, I certainly hope that it will not become some sort of bargaining chip, because this is just too important to Minnesota. And I believe that, you know, today we are all together on this, and I hope we will stay together, but you will not hesitate to advise the governor to work with us in if that is needed.
Very well. Good. Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, thank you. We're aware of that. I would like to make clear that for programs that would assist workers, those are statutory programs that have been funded, and so special session is not at issue. Special session may be at issue if there are incentives for the Delta board and Delta stockholders or other issues, but we are certainly aware of that. I would point out that the important issue is always not when a special session begins, but when it ends and when agreement is reached. And we reached agreement faster than in any natural disaster in state history, even though getting to special session took longer than some of us would have liked.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Scoy and Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you having him repeat those numbers about the impact, because I was not getting all of that. I do have a question with regard to that. So the 1,000 headquarters jobs are about $300 million of economic loss if we lose those jobs, and the total state gross state product, or whatever the terminology was slightly over $300 billion. Did I hear those correct numbers correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, the total impact with direct and indirect impacts of the layoff at the level described is approximately $300 million. Now, this is a model. You can't take that number to the bank, but it's our best estimate based on fairly significant experience. The gross state product total is approximately $280 billion.
So, Mr. Chair and Commissioner McElmurray, I'm not doing my math that quick. That's slightly under.
It's about a tenth of 1%.
Tenth of 1%, yeah. Okay, thank
but
you.
It's much more than that to the families, so I don't like to minimize the impact for those families who are either, you know, have to worry for some period of time. And the testimony from Northwest is that we won't know the impact for somewhere between 6 and 24 months. That's a grave concern. And then for the families, and I'm not willing to admit that it's going to be 1,000 people. At least half of those should be in Atlanta, and I want to fight for every one of them. This is a better place to run a global company than Atlanta.
Well, Mr. Chair and Commissioner McElroy, while a tenth of 1% might sound like a small number, it's a large number, and it should be concerning to all of us that we, and I hear you saying you're working to maintain as much of that as you can.
Yeah, hopefully they're not going to take everybody with them. You know, you'd think they'd keep, hopefully, I don't know this, but a couple, 200, 300, 400 at the headquarters somewhere up here, I hope. But Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, thank you for pointing out that you're ready and willing and able to help out in the event that there's unemployment. Hopefully we don't need you and that everybody keeps their job. But, you know, we heard some pretty disturbing testimony from Mr. Gordon and from Ms. Foss. And I hope that in the governor's attempt to fight for every job here, that part of what he does is including the unions in the negotiations and try to make sure that they get their voices heard, so that when it's all said and done, that they've had an opportunity to at least be part of the negotiations and not just be thrown some crumbs at the end. And I'm hoping that the governor will do that. In addition, I don't know if anybody can answer this question or not, but this letter to Mr. Anderson and Mr. Steenland from the 26 members of the U.S. Senate, does anybody know if this letter was responded to? Right.
Not as far as I know.
Okay.
All right, any further? Here's what we're going to take about 5 or 10 minutes from Mr. Hochschild, if that's the right name, Todd, Vice President of West Managed Technology Service. then I think the logical cutoff would be after he talks to us, because then we got MAC and Delta coming in. We're going to try to schedule both next week, and the logical people will be visiting, my judgment is MAC and Delta along with this committee, because the contractual things and that. So that's just a good fit, I think. So we'll do that sometime next week. So thank you, Mr. McElroy. And Mr. Hitech, where are you? There you are. Hi. Excuse me for brutalizing your name.
You did it well.
Identify yourself for the tape, and then we'll give you about 7-8 minutes. Is that pretty good?
That's ample.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Good morning. My name is Todd Hauschel, and I'm a vice president at Thomson Reuters and immediate past board chair for the Minnesota High Tech Association and current board member. I testified yesterday to the House Commerce and Labor Committee and was invited to speak to you today. I'm not here today to endorse any legislation that you may be considering, but I am here to talk about this situation and how it impacts Minnesota's technology-based economy and the jobs that are related to that economy. The Minnesota High Tech Association is an association of over 335 Minnesota-based high technology companies. These businesses include 3M, Ecolab, Honeywell, Medtronic, IBM, Quest, and many others. The problem is that the current merger offers few desirable benefits for the state of Minnesota on the onset. The loss of another corporate headquarters could be crippling and has rippling effects throughout the economy. However, with change comes opportunity. Minnesota can and should become the technology headquarters of any combined merger that would occur. No irreversible decision has been made yet on this point. The benefits of the solution, it's an opportunity for the legislation to take a leadership position on this. And it's above the traditional squabbling. It's not about lawsuits. It's not provoking a confrontation with Delta. It's a viable opportunity for the state. Some things to consider. Northwest leads the aviation industry in technology. They are forefront on self-service kiosks, e-ticketing, the e-commerce challenges of doing e-ticketing, mobile device notification of flights, and many other reasons. There's a 278,000 technology-based training center here and a 350,000 square foot data center here in Eagan, Minnesota, as well as flight training facilities for the Airbus A320, as well as the A330, and soon to be the Boeing 787. They use this facility to train the world's pilots on these aircraft. In Minnesota, employee recruiting and retention is very good and superior to many other metro areas. The technology wages are actually lower here, housing prices are lower, and there's less congestion. This is an important factor in our economy. When we look at what the technology economy means to Minnesota, is that 128,500 high-tech workers are in Minnesota. This is 17th in the nation. We grew jobs, over 600 jobs, between 2005 and 2006 here. And high-tech firms employed 56 of every 1,000 private sector workers in 2006. Once again, 15th in the nation. High-tech workers in Minnesota averaged $71,600 per year in salary, or 69% more than the average private sector wage in Minnesota. In 2006, Minnesota had a high-tech bankroll of $92 billion, and that's 17th in the nation. So you see that this contributes greatly to the technology economy. The technology economy is very important to Minnesota, and you have an opportunity to take a leadership role in protecting it and growing it. Thank you, and I will take any questions.
It's good to hear a little optimism, too. I think that's what I heard. So any further questions? Yeah, we're coming back next week on this, so appreciate everybody. Senator Dibble, did you have a statement? And we'll hear the two bills, too, then, at that time. We're just out of time. We're in session at noon, and so we're not forgetting
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. You know, I wanted to hear
more
fully what your intention is, because of course Senator Carlson and I have worked hard on some policy ideas. We've worked hard on developing some information that would be interesting to today's hearing.
I think, yes, and I'm sorry for that, but I think hopefully you'll agree with me that we had to hear all these folks, and I didn't want to cut anybody off either, so very important issue. Senator Day, did you have
I have a comment. I think it's been interesting, the dialogue we're having here today. In some aspects, I think I resent some of the things that have said, in that I worked for IBM for 27 years. We had up to 400,000, 500,000 employees that weren't unionized, and we all seemed to feed our families. So I resented that. But there are some things that we all talk about. We all talk about things we should be doing. I think Senator Michel, when he talked about our corporate taxes, 9.8 to 6, I just looked up some other stuff. I mean, we're 42nd most toxic business climate state. Georgia's 20th. We're the 44th highest corporate taxes. Georgia's 6th. We're the 40th highest sales tax. Georgia's 16th. I mean, if you're going to locate a business, Atlanta is 6th, Savannah's 90th, Twin Cities 103rd. We all sit around here when we're losing these things. This gentleman is talking here. We could go out to Hutchinson Technology. Yesterday they just laid off 80 people. We could work on that. When I was with IBM, we laid off 150,000 people in a couple of years. What are we going to do with Northwest Airlines? Just let them fade on into nothing? Or do they get a chance to say, hey, let's merge and see if we can put something together? I hope we're all optimistic. I want to keep the jobs here. I hope we can all do this. But I don't know how it helps that somebody says, well, you got to be unionized or you can't be in Minnesota. What's that all about? I have a district, and maybe there isn't many union companies in it. So what? They pay good jobs. They're moving ahead. So that doesn't mean Delta can't come up here and run whatever they run. And I voted against Northwest Airlines when they had their PAC. I was here. I voted against Northwest Airlines. And no, I'm not. In transportation, Senator Carlson was the car guy. I now realize he's the airplane guy, and I knew all along I was the car guy. I don't fly much. I drive about 60,000 miles a year, so if I go to Talladega, I'll go by car, or I'll go by car anyplace. But I don't know. I mean, my goodness, I just hope we go at it, that we let companies do some things, because we're never going to grow our economy in the state of Minnesota if the only way we're going to say is, okay, well, we're going to just shut it down, and we're very cynical about anybody else that's doing business. So that's my comments, and we'll wait until next week and get involved in whatever we're doing. But maybe what we should do, which I've tried to do for 18 years here, look at our tax rate. But nobody looks at that. Everybody says keep raising the taxes. Then people lose their job, and the same people that raise the taxes, they go back and say, we're your friend. And I'm going to tell you guys, if we don't get our tax structure, we put in $6 billion just recently in another tax. And other people are saying, let's, you know, have a tax break on things. So my feeling is we should be looking at some things, but I don't know if it should be this community or this committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tavassotti.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, you must have selective hearing, because maybe you didn't hear what Commissioner McElroy said about the most Fortune 500 companies of any city its size in the country, one of the best working climates in the entire country. That was coming from a commissioner your side of the aisle. And I realize that you hate unions. I realize you hate unions, but all these people are saying is it's against the law to not allow them to try to organize. And what Delta's doing is they're trying to keep them from organizing. And all they're saying is they want to be able to have the right to organize should there be a merger here.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, if this was one of my companies, E.F. Johnson and Waseca, or I could name you 10 of them that were non-unionized, we would never even be talking about it. They would just, their jobs would just go. We're here talking about this because it's a unionized company.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, you should.
You don't
try,
believe
you
that?
Should, you should try. You should try and protect jobs that are non-union also, and don't let them go. That's part of what you should be doing. You know,
you protect them by trying to do optimistic things. You try and protect them by doing optimistic things. You can't tax companies to the height of way up here, and then when they decide to leave your state, say, oh, now what we're going to do is we're going to do everything we can to force you to stay here and do this, this, and this.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I wondered if we're in, we must be on TV. Huh? I don't know that.
Mr. Chair.
Very, very good speeches, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Depending on what side of this issue you're on. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, you know, in regards to all this talks about, oh, they're leaving because of high taxes, I don't think we heard anybody from Northwest say that there was a merger happening because of the high tax rate. And then we had the governor's own commissioner come up here and say that, you know, we do have a pretty good corporate business climate in the state of Minnesota. So I don't know where all this, you know, it's just this anti-tax crowd, and I would hope that...
Mr. All Chairman, right. Senator Murphy, you know, I just went through the listing of where we stack up as far as we have wonderful workers in Minnesota. We have a high quality of life. But my goodness, when it comes to taxes, I mean.
But anyway, Mr. Chair.
We'll be back for another day.
So.
But Senator Rosen gets the last shot,
I'm not going to try and get into this battle. I just a couple points, and I do have a question, and I'm hoping that our witness can come back later for some questions. I'm sorry I've been floating in and out, but and thank you, Senator Day, for this debate. I think it's a very good debate. for anybody that's trying to do business in Minnesota, let them do their business. That's all I'm going to say. And, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't allow the clapping in America.
Allow what?
Clapping.
All right, that's well said. Okay, the committee's adjourned till sometime next week. Hopefully early.
So I also are doing some. Take some of these?
The letter from Northwest Airlines.
I'll talk to you later, Mr. Hooker.
All right. You gonna go then?
But there will be no need for me to testify, right?
Unless we're testifying.
We're just going there just to watch, right?
Well, we'll have our international representatives that probably will be testifying.
Okay. I just want to go there, sit and watch.
You're just going to go in just like you did today?
And just keep quiet.
And you, well, I mean, maybe generally, if you can't go in there because you'll end up, if you go in there and start saying stuff, you'll end up getting thrown out, thrown in jail.
That's a more serious situation there.
Well, they have police that are right there that kind of...
Have you ever been to these hearings in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. Yeah, there's police. I mean, it's all up in front. It's a little professional, just like this.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you can see them, the hearings, when you go on TV, you go on C-SPAN, you can see what they're like. But the... you can see ours, too. But the...
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Take care. Thank you very much.